to the Operation Move podcast. My name is Zoe and I'm here with Katie.
Hello, hello. It's podcast day. Hooray.
It is. We're back. How was your week?
It has been interesting. I don't think I can watch TV anymore. I think I've hit the stage of pregnancy where all news particularly is not good for me. I watched Four Corners this week and, it's been talked about a lot all over social media since because it was horrific. And I just had this moment where I thought, I cannot bear one more thing. So in that sense, it's been a bit of a depressing week. I cannot believe the world around us.
Yeah, see, I don't really. I mean, it's probably not great for me to be kind of oblivious, but most of the time, most of my news would either come from being on Twitter or listening to news on the radio when I'm, in the car. And a lot of times I turn the news on the radio off because the kids are in the car and they're talking about drowned children and God knows whatever else. And I don't really want them to hear that stuff, but I do like the local news.
I don't want to not be exposed to it. Like, I think it's important, but at the same time, there's just overload at the moment. Like, between this report last night, and I guess particularly, that thing when you're pregnant and you are just that bit more susceptible to emotional stuff anyway. But I was watching it and there's, this child being abused in detention up in the Northern Territory, and I'm looking at him and I could just see my son because he's the same age. I don't think, any parent with a kid that age could look at that and not see their child. And, you just kind of feel things on that different level. And between that and there have been babies die in a hospital and there's all this terrorism and I keep hearing things that angry up my blood, like stupid Sonia Kruger talking rubbish.
Yeah, and I think it's part of it is too, I think that, the news machine and crime or terrorism or anything else like that are so closely related because they do elicit that response in people. But, most people, if you ask them, is Australia or even is America more or less safe than it was 20 or 30 years ago, they would say less safe because that is people's perception because of the news media, but actually it's not true.
And it's that machine feeding us what we want because we keep eating it up and demanding more graphic, more horrifying, more whatever.
Yeah, so I think that, obviously you want to be, you want to be informed about what's going on, and I certainly like to be very engaged in, the political process and that kind of stuff. But I also think there's a level where some of it is just sort of feeding the machine, and it's fine to sort of step back and say, yep, I've had enough of that today. And it is one of those things that when you actually look at some of the things in context, like obviously in the moment when you're watching news you have a visceral response, and it's not about news numbers or statistics or anything out, it's just that person that you see and that you relate to. But if you sort of take a step back from it and say, well, as many or more women have been killed by their partners than terrorist attacks in Australia over the last 30 years compared to probably about 1 year of domestic violence, a lot of that sort of that fear that we have is kind of disproportionate to the threat.
But it's about what sells, isn't it? So, I'm trying to deliberately step back a bit from that because I recognise that I'm feeding the machine by buying into it as well. But, it's hard not to feel all the things at the moment. And especially, I guess, because my older kids are becoming aware of the news cycle, and particularly my son who's new seven, he'll come home and they'll have talked about particular things at school and we'll have conversations around it. And, we're lucky in that the school my kids go to is very heavily multicultural. There's a lot of different cultural backgrounds, different religions. It's a very highly tolerant school, which is what I think the whole world should be. he comes back with information and he wants to talk about things as points of interest, not with the kind of judgment that we see in the media. But gosh, it's a slippery slope, and I guess the thing that shocks me the most is just that intolerance that people cannot fathom that someone else is the same as them if they look different.
Yeah, I mean, you see it and it's almost in some ways for me, like with seeing some of the comments that have been made, I look at that and think, how is that? How is that a real thought that a person has? Like it kind of violates any kind of basic logic and kind of goes back to exactly the kind of hysteria that allowed Nazism to flourish back when it did, you know? And it is just completely outside my understanding that that could be the case. And I mean, even recently with, you know, a lot of the stuff with Black Lives Matter in the US, and Josh was saying to me, oh, you know, do you think that that kind of stuff happens here too with Indigenous people? And I said, yes, because
Absolutely.
since, you know, probably since about 1980, there have been 1,500 deaths, Aboriginal deaths in custody, and no person has ever been prosecuted for them.
Yeah, it's a terrible, terrible thing. Gosh, well, hopefully at least, you know, the upside of the way this report happened on Four Corners means that there will be inquiries take place and hopefully change. But it's terrible that that's what it gets to before, you know, anything is done.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's so much too is like you have, say, for example, you know, you have this kind of political pandering as if they're doing something about it, as if they haven't created
Yes.
the scenario in the first place by feeding the Australian public the lie that they're illegal queue jumpers and that they don't have a right to be here, where in fact they're legally allowed to request refugee status, and the vast majority, like 99% or something, are usually found to be genuine refugees. So what are we doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's their creation, but you know, not yet. See,
I know.
it's easy to get worked up,
It
which
really
is
is, and I've
why
been super worked up
we
about it, and I just it's just a tricky thing. But look, in less depressing news, how's this for cute? My little girl, my 5-year-old, has taken to carrying a baby around with her, and it's one of those really ugly, horrible, plastic, non-cuddly, you know, I think it used to be one
You
of
know
my
what my
sisters.
kids call those plastic babies? Because Piper's also a bit fond of the plastic baby. They call them potato babies.
Oh God, that's so funny. Well, she's got a potato baby and she carries it around with her everywhere. She won't dress it or anything. And the other night she was tucking into bed with it. She's cuddling up to her and I said, oh, do you want your teddy bear? It might be a little more cuddly. She goes, no, I'm practicing for when our baby comes so it can sleep in my bed with me. She's in for shock. That's never going to happen, but oh, so cute.
Yeah, Piper informed me that she would like to have twins.
Oh, good luck with that, Piper.
Yeah, I don't think that that is gonna. Well, A, I don't think that she'll be able to choose, and B, I think that she may rethink that thought at some stage.
Oh, kids are so funny. Tom, who's 7, just said to me last night, you know, what about the baby after this baby? And I said, oh no, there won't be any more babies, sweetheart. This is it. There'll be 5 kids in our family, and that's plenty. He's like, but how do you know? And I'm like, well, I just know. I just know there will be no more babies after this baby. He's like, but how? How do you know? I just thought, oh my gosh, I didn't even know where to start. Oh, bless them. They're cute, those little people. You've got to
Yes,
love
they
them.
are.
Yes. Anyway, how's your week been?
It's pretty good. I went out for a long run on the weekend, which was good. I've been having, which is sort of related, we're going to be talking a bit about injury prevention, and not on my normal runs, but in some of the longer runs or marathons that I've run, I get this ITB irritation just on the outside of the knee, and it's, you know, it doesn't tend to show up for a while, but then it makes that last sort of 5Ks of the marathon pretty unpleasant, and I've been sort of trying to figure out, you know, what's causing it, and so I've been, you know, rolling it and looking at sort of what's going on with the shoes and that kind of stuff. And so I sort of went out on the weekend to see, because it would usually kick in, I would notice it being aggravated after probably about 17 or 18 k. So I thought I can go for a nice long run and see if it shows up. And if it shows up, then I think I'll change my entry for Brisbane Marathon and go down to the half, because it's just not worth going through that nastiness for 5 k's.
No, it's definitely not.
But I wore the shoes that I actually trained for Melbourne in last year, as opposed to the ones that I have been wearing. I think that they have just a little bit more support and sort of at points where I felt it sort of niggling a bit, sort of stretched out my calves as I went, and I was fine. So that was good. Nice to know that it's not going to be a persistent problem as long as I take care of it. And this week, Piper's kindergarten teacher's gone on maternity leave, so I've been holding her hand while she adjusts just to a new teacher. And just sometimes when that happens, it just reminds you how little they are. Like, she was sort of on my lap this morning at drop off, and she was all snuggled up in a ball, and she had her little eyes closed, and she's snuggling up to me, and I was like,
Still a baby. Transitions are so hard.
yeah. And she's still like, they'll often ask me at school, they'll say, "Oh, is she really quiet at home?" I'm like, "No." So it's obvious that it's still quite a challenging environment for her, you know, being in kindergarten. I mean, she always has a great time once she's there, but I think that it is the kind of thing where I get the much more kind of yelly, emotionally explosive Piper at home because of it. So yeah, but today was better than yesterday. Yesterday we both cried.
Those days are hard.
They are.
Yeah,
So.
my son has been waking up every night probably for the past week and a half now, which will just be the same kind of transitioning back to school, and there's a lot going on, and obviously we've got big family changes that he's adjusting to in his own way. And it's like practice, I guess, when the baby comes. And I had lulled myself into a false sense of security, having had a year of children sleeping through the night after, you know, a decade of them not. But in that year, I've grown to like it. So it's
Yeah.
kind of jarring to not be sleeping again. And because, of course, he's tired, he's, you know, the same. He's quite emotional and he's all over the place. And he's the most precious little thing. He's the same. He curls up and he makes himself really small. And I just, you look at him and I go, "Oh, you are still a baby, you know." I'm still such a small person, and I just want to protect him from the world, but at the same time, I want him to go to sleep.
Yeah, I mean, Piper's had disturbed sleep in the last week as well, which I'm sure is all to do with the same, because sometimes she gets sort of into that thing of being half awake and half asleep, and she'll be kind of like crying out and that kind of stuff, but she's not even really aware that she's distressed or awake. She's kind of in between, and so I kind of have to wake her up and say, you know, like, what's wrong, you know, and she'll say nothing, I'm just scared. And so my sleep has been very, very interrupted.
At least I will admit this is a pretty amazing thing. Most of the time now, Tom calls out for Rob. Like, you'll hear him go, "Robbie, Robbie." And I just lie there and quietly punch the air and think, I don't know how or when this happened, but I'm going to take it.
Good practice for Rob.
Yes, exactly right.
You've had plenty of practice. You don't need practice.
Yeah, that's one of the things I'm more than happy to handle. Anyway, running things.
Running things, moving on. So yeah, we're going to talk a bit about injury prevention, and we talked a bit about injury last week, and I think that over time I've realized the best thing with injury is to be really proactive. You know, it's so easy to kind of, there's a sort of head in the sand approach of, oh, that doesn't feel right. Maybe if I just put, if I ignore it, it'll go away. But it rarely goes away. So, you know, getting out in front of it nice and early is always a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you know what I think as well, particularly for people who are new to running and you're kind of still just discovering that you can do this thing and you love it and you're so excited, you just want to keep doing it. So you get a niggle, you just want to keep doing it. Or maybe you think, well, I did this yesterday and it felt great, so I'll do it again. And it's that overuse of doing something new that can also really trigger things that you could avoid by just, you know, taking it back off a little bit
Yeah, I
and
mean,
going for the long game.
it's easy to sort of think that, oh, well, it's, you know, I need to be tough and I need to push through it and that kind of thing, when usually that's the exact wrong thing to do. I mean, I was talking to someone at CrossFit the other week, and she has an old shoulder injury that she's doing physio exercises for. And she said, I don't understand why I'm fine during the day, and then when I go to bed at night, I'm in this awful pain and I can't get to sleep. And I'm saying it's because your movement pathway and your pain pathway are the same. So when you stop moving, you feel the pain. And so if you are out running and pain breaks through, then that's a sign that it's going to hurt a whole lot more when you stop moving.
Yeah, it really is. That's really interesting, isn't it? And yeah. Pain is such a tricky thing, particularly when you are new to moving more, because you can mistake discomfort and pain, and it's, you know, you need to be able to recognize which is which. And if you feel something muscular and it's uncomfortable, chances are that's discomfort. If it's in a joint and it's, you know, sharp or stabbing, that's not discomfort.
Yeah, and I mean, probably the most common type of injury or problem with new runners would be shin splints. I probably get an email about shin splints every day. And it's easy to think that, you know, oh, I just need to rest it because it hurts and then it will get better, but it doesn't actually get better, and as soon as you start running again, it will flare up again, and it actually takes a combination of rolling to loosen up all of the muscles and developing that muscle, because it's an immaturity in the muscles. So I always get people to do things like heavy calf raises, and not just sort of like flat off the floor, like your feet hanging off the edge of a step so you can get full extension. And and then it just, you can also do things like picking up like pencils or towels off the floor with your toes, which sounds really weird, but it all helps develop that muscle that is in a little bit of crisis because it's just not used to being used in that way. And because you've got to develop it, if you're resting, that's not going to be any good. But also, nothing is going to heal when you're in pain, so there's no point in pushing through and thinking that that's going to come good, because it's not. Because you, when your body is in crisis like that, it's just going to get worse and worse if you push through.
And sometimes I think when we're following training plans, or, you know, you're really focused on a particular event, or, you know, when you're starting, you're really focused on how great you've discovered running feels, you can push through and you might go, oh, well, I'll just do it tomorrow and it will be okay. When generally, if you're following a plan or you have a coach and that coach has said there's these breaks between runs, there's a really good reason for that. It's not because we don't want you out there running. It's because your body needs that time to rest and to adapt.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I think that there's a couple of things to do with recovery that it's easy for people to gloss over when you're in the kind of honeymoon stage of starting something and everything's really exciting, is that all of the fitness improvements happen during rest periods. So if you don't have the rest period, you don't have the fitness improvement, because what happens is you sort of apply a fitness stimulus, your body responds by getting tired, and then your body then overcompensates to that fatigue by raising your level of fitness to handle that kind of fatigue. So, but that only works if you rest. If you don't rest, then you don't get the fitness benefit, basically. And then the other thing, of course, is to do with sleep, which has a similar impact, in that you are not going to be getting the most out of any kind of training unless you are getting solid sleep, which I know, like, a lot of people are mothers and
not sleeping ever.
Like, there's, you know, it's all about if controlling the things that you can control. Like, somebody was asking me this morning, like, sort of, how do you set yourself up to get a decent night's sleep so that you can get up the next morning, and when it's really tempting to stay up late when the house is quiet, which I totally get.
And I totally do.
But basically, because the way my schedule is I go out in the early morning on Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday and Sunday. So on those other days, I'm not leaving the house early. So the night before that, if I want to stay up a bit later, I'm okay with that because I get a bit more of a sleep in the morning. But on the days when I'm going to be going out for a run or to CrossFit or wherever, whatever, then I will sort of make a conscious effort to get myself into bed by 10:30. It's not hard at the moment because it's so cold. And I'm like, and Piper's sleeping in our bed, and I'm like, it's a bit chilly, and there's a doona in there, and there's a warm body. I'll just go in there and go to sleep, and I'm quite happy to do that. But I think that's also because she's of a certain age where she's not hanging off me 24/7, and I know that when she was a toddler and when I had babies, I would stay up a lot later after they were in bed because I just needed that time with no one touching me.
Yeah, and sleep is one of those things, like even if you don't have children, if you have episodes of insomnia and things like that, it's sometimes just completely out of your control.
And or, you know, like a crazy work schedule, or, yeah, you know, like definitely so not exclusive to motherhood.
And I think the thing is just to be listening to your body. Like, I think all of us have a point of tiredness that we can cope with if we've dealt with lack of sleep for an extended period of time. You know, we kind of know where our limit is in terms of coping, but there's a point where, you know, if you are that fatigued, you are going to do more harm than good, and you need to be super aware of that because that rest will do you so much more good.
And also think about it in terms of, like, say, for example, if you are going out for a run, or you're going to an early morning boot camp session, or you're heading to the gym to do weights, or whatever it is that you're doing, and you are fatigued, you're going to put all of this effort into your training, and you're not going to see optimal results because you're fatigued. So you'd be better off, if you can, to get that rest, go into that session when you are, you know, I mean, no one's ever 100%, are they? But closer to that, you know, feeling like you've got a decent night's sleep, you will get so much more out of that session rather than being something that you're just tired and you're doing so you can tick it off your list of, yep, I've done it.
Yeah. And look, there are obviously a lot of injury prevention is about getting to know your body better, paying attention to it, understanding what it is trying to tell you as you move through different phases of your training. But there are also, as well as that kind of passive paying attention, there are really active things you can do to minimize the chance of injury, like strength training and stretching as well.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that probably with running, some of the really key areas that can need attention are things like glutes, which, because people so spend so much time sitting down, often not used to using them, and I can tell that I don't use them as much as I should because whenever I do lunges they hurt. And also core activation, because people kind of think of the core and they think of the outer abs, or like the six pack, if you could see the six pack underneath your layer of winter warmth. And but actually when you're talking about the core, as it helps most things, whether it be, you know, weights or running, is the deep core, which is sort of the posture muscles that go around sort of like a belt, you know, around where your pelvis is. And it's really quite a subtle thing. So if you're not used to, you know, it's all very well for somebody to say, make sure your core's on, but it doesn't necessarily mean a whole lot if you don't even know how that feels. And so I know, and because it's not like a flexing, like you know, so everything around your ribs and everything else should still be quite relaxed when the core is on. So it's quite a subtle movement, and it can take a little bit to work out how to be aware of it. But when you do, it's going to take loads and loads of pressure off your legs, off your back, and it's going to mean that you are in a much better position for whatever you're doing. And so for me, I think one of the things that really helped me to learn about those deep core muscles was going to Pilates, because then I had someone saying, no, it's here.
Yeah, it's great to have that kind of guideline as to what's going to support you and help you with your running. And I think for a lot of runners, there's a temptation to go, well, you know, I run, that's my exercise, I don't need to do anything else. And you don't need to do anything else, but it is very much in your favor to focus on some strength training. And there's a big difference between strength training as in weightlifting for bulk gains, which I have done, and strength training to support another activity, which it's a very different thing. So when you're looking to weightlift to reshape your body, that actually doesn't marry up with distance running anyway. You won't get what it's depressing. I know
it's so sad.
It is sad and it's wrong and it's very depressing, but it's sadly a fact. So if you're weight training to look a specific way to reshape your body, you're looking at lifting heavy, you're wanting to make gains on your muscles, and the kind of running you need to do to support that is, you know, probably once a week doing a very hard cardio session like sprints or fartlek or, you know, one very short tempo run. That's it. You're not endurance running. You're not doing the kind of running we love to do. And sadly, the two just don't go together. Whereas for endurance running, which is what we love, the kind of strength training you're doing is about supporting those muscles and developing power in them and supporting that, particularly like you're saying, through your core, because that's so imperative, especially in distance running.
And I mean, I think also over time you can get a sense of where your weaknesses are. So, you know, I have been doing a range of different things with running or with CrossFit or with strength training for a while, and I can say, okay, a common problem that I have is when I am going down into a squat, my torso drops forward. So I can then go, okay, you know, what are the things? And part of that would be to go, you know, it would be to go lighter, but I'm also doing some things like with wall facing squats. So I have to stay upright, which is, it's so much harder.
Oh, it's so hard. Yes.
And so things like that. And I can also see that, part other things that are probably weaknesses in me are a certain sort of, explosiveness from the hips, which aren't quite there, and there are things that I can work on for that. And and you know, like I'm aware of where I've had injuries in the past, so you know, with the adductor and stuff like that, so I can kind of do my supporting training around areas that I know are potentially weak. And I generally, my coaches know where my weak areas are, so if I'm doing kettlebell swings, they'll be looking at me to make sure I'm actually using my glutes.
And I think, you know, for most runners, if you have limited time or interest in strength training but you want to focus on, you know, one or, you know, two particular things, a really great idea is just to be aware that it's the core and the hip muscles. So, you know, the abductors, the adductors and the glutes. When you work on those, you're increasing your leg stability all the way through your legs, which also minimizes the chance of knee injury because it's all connected.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
if all you do is focus on those things, you're going to be doing yourself a big favor.
A lot of people talk about the knees with running, and while we're on the topic, we might as well talk about the vast majority of time when you are running and you feel pain into the knee, it is nothing to do with the knee. So most of the time it's a hip stability issue, which, like you were just talking about, is about core and it's about glutes, but it actually has very, very little to do with the knee. So this sort of persistent sort of myth that running is bad for your knees is not actually true. But the more you strengthen the hips, the less pressure there is on everything else.
Yep, absolutely. If that's one thing you take from this podcast, do some squats. You know, focus on getting that part of your body moving and mobile, not just through doing your runs, because it will thank you for it. And it doesn't have to be boring. Like, it doesn't have to just be go do squats. There are lots of, if you Google, you can find heaps of great little things for specifically for runners. If you're a run club, you've got access to some great activities and workouts. Plyometric kind of stuff is great for building power, and it's fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think as long as you have some variety in what you're doing, and I know that initially the jump from running to strength training that's going to support you can be a tough one, because I know that I really struggled with it. Like, I would go for a run, no problem, but if I'm going, okay, I'm going to do this when I'm at home, and then it would just not happen. and then I think that after a while, you just, as long as you make it a priority and treat it the same as you would a run, then it does happen.
Yeah.
And I think that also sometimes that is where, you know, going to a boot camp class or something with other people can also help to keep you motivated in that style of training. Or, you know, run club where, you know, people use my name as a swear word all the time. I mean, that's always fun. Who doesn't love that?
I think, look, if it's something that's accessible as well, it can be a great idea to maybe book a session with a personal trainer and talk specifically about what your goals are with running so that they can maybe even just write you a little program of your own that you can do at home or at the gym in your own time. You don't have to commit to, you know, 3 times a week doing anything particularly, but if you've got that guidance that's specific to you, particularly if you've had niggles or issues in the past, that will be really helpful.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are just so many ways. And even if you're the, for example, when I started, like, yes, I had the shin splints, but other than that, I could pretty much run every day and not get injured. And that continued on for a couple of years until it didn't. And so even if you are one of those people who doesn't seem to run into any niggles, I have met a few people who are like, I've never used a roller, and I'm like, oh, who are you? Even if you are the type of person who seems to, you know, not be prone to injury, you don't seem to have a whole lot of issues if you do runs back to back, that kind of thing. That may that's great, but there you're only going to get more benefits by doing the things that are going to ensure that that doesn't happen down the track, because you can definitely get into a thing where, you know, things like tight muscles can sort of build on themselves over time, and then all of a sudden you're a bit tight and you go for a run and you tear something.
Yeah, it's such a balance, I think, with running, and particularly, you know, as you're coming into it, you're going to be learning so much about your body and about what kind of feels normal in recovering from runs and what other activities you're doing that seem to support that. And it's once you're a few years in, I think, as well, you can become a bit blasé, maybe, and think, oh, well, you know, I've been doing this for years, I'm fine. And that's where maybe you do let go of the rolling, the stretching, the strength stuff, and where you can run into trouble later on as well, because we're getting older, and we're putting this repeated strain on our body, and we need to be respectful of that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I th think that there is, I think, and even aside from the injury prevention side of things, I think that if you are spending the time on strengthening all of the things that support your running, it's only going to make you a better runner. And sometimes when your focus is really about running, that's what's going to get you over the line to actually do the session, is knowing that if you are doing, you know, all of that sort of strength stuff, and you're doing jumping, and you're doing things with your glutes, and you're doing all of that kind of stuff. It's if you're doing long distance, then it is going to help your body to be in great shape even when you get tired. And if you're doing short distance, it's going to do great things for your strength and power, and be able to go that much faster.
Absolutely, there's benefits all around with that kind of thing. And then I guess, yeah, the other end of that is the stretching, which a lot of us, including myself, can be tempted to overlook, particularly if you've been out for a longer session and you've already, you know, spent a fair bit of time, and you kind of think, well, you know, I did a walking cool down, so I find I don't need to stretch. And you can pay for that later on.
I mean, what I find at the moment is if I'm a little bit tight, I think it's really great. I know that, you know, people like to get into a rhythm and everything like that, but often if I start a run and I feel a bit tight, then I might stop every couple of minutes or so to stretch, and I'll just keep doing that because it's a great time to stretch because I'm warm.
Yeah,
So
absolutely. I think static stretching, which is when you hold something for 30 seconds or more before you've warmed up at all, actually doesn't do you any favors. You're
no.
better off walking a little bit, or, you know, having a light run and then doing those stretches once your muscles have already got some blood flow to them.
Or even, you know, you can do jumping jacks or whatever it is, you know, if you want to sort of do some stretches before you leave the house, particularly when it's cold, then you could do like a little warm up in your lounge room. I often use the yoga with Adrienne. She has a yoga warm up, so I might do that inside before I actually go out, and that way I can do a bit of a warm up and a stretch without sort of then having to be doing it outside when it's a bit chilly.
Yeah, and there are lots of dynamic things you can do if you are, like I used to always run after I dropped the kids at school, and particularly when I lived in Ballarat, and it was, something come up in my time hop the other day, and I'd done a long run and started in -4 degrees. And I looked at this thing and I just thought, what has happened to me? I used to be tough as nails, and now I'm like, I'm not getting out of bed for anyone. Oh, well, we'll blame pregnancy. But anyway, I used to, because, I'd get to the lake and it would be that kind of temperature and I would be freezing, just heading off running was not going to do me any favors. So I'd do some dynamic warm ups like leg swings, side to side and front to back, and just really warm up the hips, do some, a few jump squats, things like that, that are just getting the muscles moving and getting me a little bit warm so that once I was on the road, I had a little bit of mobility in those joints already.
Yeah, I mean, and it's amazing what difference it makes. Because with before I went out on, I think it was, I'm not sure if it was on. I think it was before I went out on the long run. The night before, I'd done a whole lot of rolling because my calves were a bit tight, and it really, really hurt. I have to say, like, I got onto the, I'm not sure what it's called, but it's that sort of fascia on the, on the outside of the shin there. And I was doing that, I said to Josh, I said, I think I'm going to need some wine for this. It's really intense. But I kept going and did it, and such a huge difference the next day with going on a run compared to the last time I went for a run, where sometimes when you have that feeling like running is really slow and it's a bit like sort of, everything just feels slow and sluggish, and it's a bit like running through quicksand or something. That's actually because your muscles are tight. And once you do some stretching and some rolling, I went out for that run and I felt a lot more easy, and it was, my pace was probably, had picked up a bit from the last time I'd gone for a run, but it didn't feel like I was going any faster, and that's just because my muscles were happy.
Yeah, it can make such a big difference. And conversely, at the end of a run when maybe you're feeling a little tired and you think, oh, I can't be bothered doing a bit of a stretch now, I'll just get in the car and go home. That's even if you just spend a couple of minutes, it's a really good idea because your body will thank you for it later on. Something I used to do when I really felt like that, and look, I'm the queen of it, I'm really prone to going, oh, well, I'm done, is that I would get to my car and I would at least stand on the, like I've got quite a big car with a side rail on it, side step. So I'd stand on the side step and kind of drop my calves and stretch out the back of my calves. And I'd, bend over and touch my toes and stretch out the back of my thighs. And, even just that little bit could make a really big difference to how my legs felt later in the day.
Yeah, and I mean, I just do, I can use either sort of like a curb or like the pole of a signpost to stretch out my calves towards the end. And then I have just probably a couple of the stretches that I repeat, where I sort of cross over my legs and bend down, and I do that on both sides, and then I put one ankle on the opposite knee and kind of bend down. It's a good sort of glute stretch. But we'll be able to link you up to some good stretching and rolling stuff that you can start doing at home, so you don't have to try and interpret what I
What we're
just
saying.
described.
Yeah.
But it is, and I've started doing a bit of that. I usually get to CrossFit a bit early, and I started sort of doing a bit of that too, particularly if I'm a bit sore, and it does make a much bigger difference than what you think it will. And I think that whatever you invest in your sort of supporting strategies and injury prevention strategies, you are going to get paid back in your longevity.
Yeah, absolutely. It's time that's worth investing in terms of your long-term running future as well.
And you only need to know that to listen to one person who is injured complaining about not running. And I've
Yes.
certainly done that in the past. And even you bore yourself after a while. You're like, oh my God, I'm so
Oh
boring.
gosh, that's bad. I'm boring myself to tears. I can't run at the moment again. And I'm walking and walking and walking, but I've got some hip instability already. And oh my gosh, I just am driving myself completely mental. And I'm not even injured. You've only got another 6 months of this to go, Zoe.
Do you still have a running pram or stroller, or have you given everything away?
I gave everything away. My sister has my running pram. So I'm hoping by the time our baby's big enough to run with, that her baby might be old enough to not be interested in it anymore. But look, it's definitely on the list, and we're pram shopping at the moment for the everyday pram, and I'm looking for something that I'll be able to put some decent mileage on in terms of walking as well. And I said to Rob the other day, look, the reality is I'm getting a treadmill because apparently I've committed to do Surf Coast next year. Nothing like going back in with a bang. So, I will do whatever it takes. I've done it before with
Yeah,
Sam
I
Kidd. I'll
mean,
do it
if
again.
I was, I think that when Piper was little, like I went down to the 24-hour gym to use the treadmill because Josh would get home too late for me to do anything outside. But, I sort of started running late into there, like Riley was already, 3 or 4 when I'd started running. And now, if I was having a baby, which I'm definitely not,
Are you sure? I can't tempt you. I know I'm making pregnancy seem super glamorous and fun.
I would definitely be investing in a treadmill because, it's just particularly, I remember when I think Riley, I don't know what her sleep was like, but Piper, I remember she just slept all the time. She would be, asleep for, have these, big 3 hour sleeps during the day when she was a little baby. And I was like, what did I even do when Riley was a baby? Like, I remembered being this kind of thing of me never having any time. And then Piper was born and all I had was time. And so if I was, had started running earlier, I would definitely would have, particularly where you are, where you have an actual identifiable winter.
Yes, yeah. Do you know, that's really funny. That was kind of exponential for me too. Like I do know what I did when Jack was sleeping all the time. He's my oldest. I was baking. That's what I did back then. I baked. I cooked for the country because I love that stuff. And whereas with the others, I always had more babies at home. So this for me is kind of like having that first baby again, but having it with Clues. And I'm going to use every minute of that sleeping time. And even, I was thinking, I could join a gym and the baby could go in the crèche and I could run in a gym, but I don't. I think I'd rather just get a treadmill to get through winter and then try and get back outside as soon as I
Yeah,
can.
I mean, as long as you have the space for it, and it can be like, I've sort of turned our garage into an office slash workout area, and so if I did live somewhere where there was a real winter and I needed a treadmill, I could probably put one in here and it would be good because, I mean, now that the kids are older, I don't have to worry about it so much. But I remember when they were littler and they were around my sister's treadmill, it was always a bit of a, you've got to be careful of safety and make sure the treadmill's away from them and
Yeah, so I
all of
thought I
that sort of
might
stuff.
hire one. Like Sarah was 2 when I started running, and was in daycare a couple of days a week because I was working from home and stuff. So this is a whole new ball game for me. So if anyone out there has, run through pregnancy, which I may or may not do at this stage, but has run with a newborn and has tips for me, jump into the community group. I'd love to hear them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I started, I think I started getting back into things at about 12 weeks after Riley because she was a C-section, and probably a lot sooner with Piper because you bounce back a lot quicker
Yeah.
when you don't have a C-section. But I did so much walking with both of them in the pram, and then when I had two of them, I'd have sort of Riley in the often sort of in the pram or in the trike, and then I'd have Piper in the in the Hugabub or in the Ergo. It's a great strength training.
Yeah, I was thinking that just the other day. I'll be looking for a new sling again.
Yeah, I mean, they're so, I cannot believe I didn't, like, I had one of those sort of like a peapod type thing with Riley that I never, just put so much pressure on one shoulder that
Yeah.
I didn't really like it. So when I had the wrap carrier with Piper, and she had colic for 6 weeks, so she basically needed to, she was fine during the day, but from about probably 6 o'clock to 11 o'clock at night, she would just scream, and that wrap carrier was so good because she would just be in there. I would just walk around with her, and she would sleep in there during the day too, so I could go and do things with Riley, and and just it just made everything so much easier. And I was like, where were you the first time around?
Yeah, the two of my sisters are big Sling Mamas, so I'm sure they'll have lots of advice and ideas for me. I was with two of my, but actually it was a ring sling that went on one shoulder with my second child that has caused my ongoing back problems. So, and the hip
Yeah, I mean
instability, so.
that's why for me I liked the wrap one that went sort of evenly across both shoulders. But also, Piper was quite little, so she was capable of being in there until she was about 18 months. But it also depends what they like. Like she would like that, or she would like to be put into her bed on her own, but she could not stand the idea of being rocked to sleep, which I was so used to with Riley. Riley was like everything needed to be. She needed to be rocked for like an hour to go to sleep, and Piper was like, "No, I'm sleeping now. Don't touch me."
I'd like one of those. I'm going to put in an order for one of those, please, and one that sleeps through at 6 weeks, like my oldest child did, and none of the other three.
Yeah, I mean, surely you've done the hard yards now, and the universe will reward you.
This is my theory. We shall see.
So yes, tangent again.
Something different.
Something different.
I'm sure that's why like 50% of people listen, just to see how far we can get off topic.
That's the best part, surely. So yes, we will be back next week. I don't have our list of topics, so I'm not exactly sure what we will be talking about, but I think we're getting into some more specifics with training next week, so that'll be fun. So if you have any questions about your training, feel free to email me or pop them into the community group and we'll talk about that. And in a couple of weeks, a few of us will be up at the Brisbane Marathon Festival. So I would, if anyone else is going to that, give us a shout so that we can know to look out for you.
Yeah, that's going to be an awesome one
Yeah, well,
for those of us who are spectating from Victoria.
it was so great at Jetty to meet some of the women in Learn to Run and everything like that, and they're out there running in events, and they've only been doing it since June, such
That's
superstars.
fantastic. That is my favorite thing about what we do. It is my absolute favorite.
It is the best.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So we will have a chat next week.
All right, see you then.
Bye.